We presented a week or so ago at the council meeting, and it was contingent. Went back and met with the condominium association and basically presented what we have here. The vote was taken. It was 45-1 in favor of making the change. And basically all we're asking to do is change from an M model to an A model. And that's basically it. And when all is said and done, it will fit better on the plat than the current one. With that, they asked for a couple of things. One, they said, hey, look, you know, there are some things left over from a previous construction, which is not this construction or what I'm responsible for. But I said, oh, you know what? I'll help you. I'll plan a few days. We'll get that done and move that forward. Okay. The other thing they asked for was a bond, which I'm not quite sure what the value of it is, other than the fact that should I not be able to go ahead and finish the construction, that there will be funds provided to handle the, if you will, asphalt or landscaping. So I agreed to do that because the condominium association said they would put up half. So all that considered, it was a 45-1 vote. Go forward. So that's where we're at.
Okay. Thanks, Steve.
Sure.
Okay. Do I have a motion on this matter?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Against? None? The vote is 5 in favor. Is none against? 1 absent. Good luck, Stephen. Motion carries.
Thank you.
G9, resolution conditionally approving a condominium plat for the second addendum. That's still you.
Yeah.
John.
No discussion. Just make the motion approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Just make one note that in the typed motion that it says resolution and not ordinance. Does your motion carry that?
Yes.
Okay. Second, John, or Mike, or
Alderman Mayor.
Alderman Mayor.
Aye.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Against? None. Motion carries 5-0-1 absent.
Thank you.
Thank you, Stephen. G10, resolution imposing conditions and restrictions for the approval of special use for the single-family resident development upon property located at 11906-908 West Loomis Road, known as the Mills Hotel, Wyoming. Alderwoman Wilhelm.
Well, on page 233, it shows a layout of the tree line. And if you follow the tree line layout, which comes all the way up from the road and includes the wetland area, which are where all the building pads are. So you subtract the wetland and wetland buffers and wetland setbacks from the tree line because they're not both resources. Then you're left with just the area outside of that, which is where the building pads are. And the building pads are going to probably take out a significant amount of that. So does this meet the standards when you look at it that way?
Possibly not, but that's why we have conditions that they have to give us a more accurate delineation of the woodlands and then redo the calculations to confirm it. And they understand, that's why they mention in their materials they're asking for up to 3, because they understand they might not be able to get all 3. So they understand that there's that issue, and then we have a condition that they have to give us more accurate delineations.
Your department have a really good way of tracking this, because there are so many contingencies and so many after the facts happening. And I have seen developments in my district where mitigation plans were done, no one followed up, everything died. I just want to feel confident that, you know, these things are followed up on and things can slip through the crack. Are you confident that putting all these contingencies on every project, you've got the staff to follow up and not miss anything?
Yes, I feel confident on these conditions, following up the conditions. The only thing I would mention, since we're on that topic, is we don't look at everything all over again, though. So if somebody was trying to pull a fast one and revise the part of the plan that had no conditions, there's a chance we might miss that kind of stuff. But again, it's all a balancing act. You know, there's a lot of pressure on us to get things out the door as quick as we can. So we look at what's hot and we look at what's conditions. And so that's the only thing that I'm aware of, and I do let staff know as time permits, look at this as much as you can, but most of the time we don't have time to look at that level of detail, to look at everything to make sure they're not pulling a fast one.
Well, I asked you to work with the alderman and make sure he knows so he can watch it. So.
Yeah. Well, Jill, definitely make every effort to strengthen that revision on these topics, especially all the contingencies that we have on larger projects that are going forward. Put that reminder right on your computer. Is there a motion on this matter?
Motion to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Against? None. Motion carries 5-0, 1 absent. G11. Ordinance to create 19-10 city participation in public construction projects, adopting statutory allowance for the city may directly participate in public construction projects without submitting the same for bid.
Move to approve.
Do I have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. A roll call is required.
A roll call is required.
Because of a statutory.
You know, this is regarding the barn, historical barn project. Okay. City Clerk.
Alderman Nelson.
Aye.
Alderman Barber.
Aye.
Alderwoman Wilhelm.
Aye.
Alderman Mayer.
Aye.
Alderman Dandria.
Aye. The motion passes 5-0 and 1 absent. G12. Ordinance to amend Ordinance 2016-2240, the ordinance adopting the 2017 annual budget for capital improvement fund for the city of Franklin.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Roll call.
This is a roll call again. You're too fast.
Alderman Dandria.
Aye.
Alderman Mayer.
Aye.
Alderman Wilhelm.
Aye.
Alderman Barber.
Aye.
Alderman Nelson.
Aye.
Motion passes. Motion carries. 5-0-1. Absent. G13. This is a resolution awarding a contract to C.G. Schmidt Company in the amount of $29,684 for the construction of the footings and foundation for the historical barn reconstruction in Lions Legend Park, and rejecting the bid for construction for the building.
Move to approve.
Second.
Wait, excuse me. We've got two motions here, and you have to go to your action sheet. I'd like to know where it is on the action sheet. No, it's actually.
Yeah.
You must. It should be split. So, it's a resolution awarding a contract to C.G. Schmidt Company in the amount of $29,684 for the construction of the footings and foundation for the historical barn reconstruction.
Do I have to reject the bid first?
And
yes.
Okay, motion to reject the bid for constructing the building.
Second.
All in favor? Oh, is that a roll call or no? Okay. Roll. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
I just want to verify that.
Do one and then you don't have to ask the question.
That
do a roll call?
Okay. Huh? That you don't have to give reasons for denial.
Oh, that we don't have to give reasons for denial?
I believe you do have to give reasons for denial, but I'm not the attorney.
Mr. Liberta? Provide those.
The price exceeds the budget, and additionally, we want to rework that phase to address the electrical component of the plan and our role in that.
So, Alderwoman, does your motion also include that?
It does.
I have a second?
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Against? None. Motion carries. 5-0-1 absent. Now, do I have the secondary motion? For the resolution awarding
to approve. Resolution awarding contract to C.G. Schmidt Company in the amount of $29,684 for the construction of footings and foundations for the historical barn reconstruction in Lions Legend Park.
Do I have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Against? None. The vote, motion carries 5-0-1 absent. G14, resolution awarding contract to Dome Corporation of America, North America, in the amount of $271,160 for the DPW salt storage facility. Do I have a motion on that?
So move.
Second.
All in favor?
This is budgeted for, correct?
Yeah. This is budgeted for, correct. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Against? None. Motion carries 5-0-1 absent. G15 is a request from the Parks Commission for the Common Council to pursue further development of Pleasant View Neighborhood Park, including pavilion, volleyball courts, basketball courts, installation of playground equipment, and previously purchased by the city at 4620 West Evergreen Street. Alderwoman Wilhelm.
I'm going to make some changes to the suggested motion on the page. This is based on citizen resident input. In previous meetings that we had, neighborhood meetings, and based on what is currently in other parks. Motion directs staff to find an architect to scope the pavilion project, including related kite use provisions or facilities, and prepare a project budget for the council review using previously designated 2017 capital improvement budgeted funds, of which approximately $192,000 is from impact fees. And then there are several motions, so would Correct. You like to take the one on that one first?
Yes.
Okay, that's my motion.
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Discussion? Oh, no, there's no discussion because I saw a breath by Alderman.
Yeah, I'm not. The changes what we're looking at quite a bit here, so
well,
I'm not comfortable.
We've already voted.
Understood.
Alderwoman.
Did we motion carry on that or not? Or
he didn't say motion carry.
I didn't
yet,
say
but
motion carry.
If you say it,
then we're done.
Then nobody can change their vote.
They already voted.
They already voted. Mm-hmm.
Actually,
motion carries. There, you can discuss on the next topic because there's another motion coming.
Right.
Motion carries 5-0-1 absent.
I mean,
Alderwoman.
It didn't change it. The content, it just clarified for residents when they say, you know, we're tight on a budget. This just clarifies that their money was already previously approved in the budget and where some of that funding is coming from, that it's not all just city funds and it's partially impact fees. The only change that I added into it is this use related to possible kite provisions. Pleasant View is a wide open 72-plus acre site and always a windy area. And my thought is I had talked to the kite gentleman on St. Martin's Road. He would be interested in giving feedback on how he could have a little kite facility, basically renting or selling kites, which might provide income for the city park system. And there was support for that in my district, and certainly it's a great use of that park being as open as it is. So that was why there will be some coordination. If we can't make it work, we can't make it work. But why not look at an income source? And that was why I included that. That's right. Okay. And then the second motion, there has been a objection to basketball courts. I believe this would be the only basketball court that I'm aware of in city parks. And given the fact that Pleasant View School, which is right there, has several basketball courts, I'm going to eliminate the basketball court from the next motion. Motion direct the Director of Finance to create a budget amendment, and I'm adding from the Mar Woods allocated budget for Pleasant View Neighborhood Park Volleyball Court.
Well, I'll if you're a second, then I'll open it for discussion.
Second. I'll second.
Discussion? Now, we're calling this a neighborhood park, where this is not solely for the neighborhood. I'm wondering if that connotation creates a problem with an understanding of who this park is for.
It's designated a neighborhood park in the CORP Comprehensive Outdoor Recreation Plan, approved by the council and the park commission. That's what it's called. I didn't name it. That's what it's called.
Mr. City Attorney, do we have a problem with that?
You can ask Mr. Dito because he's the one.
Mr. Dito?
Detail worked on the comp plan, but it's a neighborhood park because it's a smaller park in the middle of a neighborhood, but that does not put up a fence or a gate to all the other citizens of America who wish to walk and recreate or walk through the park.
Yeah, it's a technical thing because the plan identifies types of parks, which is useful information when you're applying for grants. But it's only a technical thing. So, like, from a citizen foot-on-the-ground standpoint, it's what's on the sign, and we won't say neighborhood park on the sign. But Jesse's also right. There are no limits. Any of these public parks are open to anybody. We won't promote it or encourage it, but it is open to everybody.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Teal.
Yeah, the provisions within the court plan say neighborhood park should be this and should be, you know, conclude these areas, and they should have these amenities. And then different parks should have this and that. So it's just a way of breaking out and finding.
Okay. So we had a motion. We had a second by Mr. Barber, Alderman Barber. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Against? None. Seeing none, motion carries. 5-0-1 absent.
Okay, we have one more motion.
One more motion, please.
A motion to direct staff to install the Minnesota-Wisconsin Playground Proposal D741E Option 1 playground equipment previously purchased by the city for a future mini park at the Pleasant View Neighborhood Park and pursue the development of the volleyball court, scratching basketball court, and Pleasant View Neighborhood Park at Pleasant View Neighborhood Park.
Do we have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Against? Hearing none. Motion carries 5-0-1 absent.
Just double clarifying, all basketball basketball court references have been removed. You can use the ones at the school.
That is correct.
Okay.
Thank you, Joel. Hey, fire department, sorry. You're up. G16, Fire Department, is seeking common council endorsement of the dive squad.
I move to
provide. Do we want to hear from them?
Well,
they waited.
Council endorsement of Franklin Fire Department's dive rescue squad, allowing department to plan and budget its operations with greater certainty.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes 5-0-1. For the record, yes, Adam. Chief?
Absolutely.
We had a PowerPoint just to kind of inform you about this.
I would like to see it.
I didn't know there was a PowerPoint.
Well,
nobody told us that.
This is something our department does that's unique for our department this size. Going back probably to the 70s, our department has had some form of dive rescue capabilities, but it's been kind of inconsistent. It's been partly fire department, partly police department. It's passed back and forth over the years. We had an incident a few years ago that really made us double down and commit to this, and we want to be able to provide this service to our community. So these guys are going to just talk about it.
Well, first off, thank you for already approving this and wanting to kind of get an idea of what it is we do. So we made this very brief, very condensed as far as what it is we do, how we train, what we prepare for, and what we've done to date. So the picture on the front isn't something from Google. This is one of our training scenarios. This is one of our divers who was out in the water doing a mock search for one of the victims that we actually sank in one of the bodies of water, because we want to try to train as realistic as we can so that way when something does occur, we're fully prepared for it. So as a quick breakdown as far as who we are, we have 11 divers currently on our team that are spread out over the three shifts. Every diver has to undergo a basic scuba certification, so they have the bare bone, the foundation of how the equipment works, functioning underwater. And once they obtain that, then every month we have a training on some topic that's related to rescue. So we build upon those skills that we take them from a basically a recreational diver who might be going on a cruise and he quick gets a couple lessons on how the stuff works and he goes looks at some fish and some coral to what we have to do is 24/7, 365, we can't see, it's black water. Basically everything is by feel. It's not an enjoyable thing. It's cold, it's dark, and it's kind of eerie down there. So we got to make sure that we prepare our guys for those type of situations. And then just the fact that we are equipped at Station 3, which is by the high school on 47th and Drexel, that the equipment that that rig carries when called out is set up to rapidly deploy the equipment for a primary diver, who's the gentleman that goes in and does the search, and at the minimum a safety diver that hits his backup. So should something happen underwater, we run into an underwater obstacle, fishing line, stumps, trees, rocks, boulders, whatever we may get caught on or run into because we can't see, we need to have a contingency plan. And our whole goal, our mission, is to conduct a search as effectively as possible before Milwaukee shows up. They're our backup. They're coming in. They're coming in with all the toys and everything that we don't have. But at the same time, we don't want to wait around for them to show up from downtown Milwaukee. So we want to be able to do something before we get there. So our team's goal is to start a search and hopefully effect a rescue before they even arrive on scene. For those that remember, this was the catalyst that kind of started this current round back in 2010. This is the picture from the journal and the excerpt from the journal as far as that drowning that took place in 2010. It was this that kind of got us thinking about what our resources are and what it is we can and can't do should something happen. And that's what this addresses here is we kind of took a hard look at ourselves. We looked at our SOGs, our SOPs, our policies, our equipment, what it is we have in the city for hazards. Was this an isolated incident, or is there really something we need to be aware of because of the potential? And as we looked at all these things, as I showed on the bottom, our bottom line is if and when this happens again, we want to make sure we're prepared to handle it and not get caught. So a quick snapshot of what it is we do. Again, we do train every month. We try to stay in the pool during the winter months just because it's cold and just because of what the equipment will allow us to do. And then when spring and summer comes, we're out in the waters or try to be out in the waters throughout the city. So that way we are pre-planning as far as should an event take place in a body of water, a retention pond, tuckaway shores, what have you. We're familiar with it, how deep it is, what the bottom is like. How do we get down to the water? You know, what's the easiest way to get our equipment down there? So again, we're trying to prepare ourselves should something happen. And again, some of the stuff that we have to train on, the watermanship test is nothing more than a basic set of skills to make sure we can swim, we can float, and that we're physically able to deal with the stresses of wearing our equipment. So there's a series of tests we have to go through as far as how far we can swim in a certain amount of time, being able to tread water for 15 minutes, and that's with no equipment. This is just basic swimming skills that we don't put somebody that has no business being in the water but thinks it might be cool to do, and we get ourselves in trouble that way. Basic scuba skills, search patterns, as far as how to look for somebody appropriately and efficiently. Safety diver deployment and diver survival, because again, what we do is inherently dangerous. We don't know what we're getting ourselves into, so we want to make sure if we do encounter a problem, how do we get ourselves out of it? And if we get to a really tight jam, how do we get our other divers out of that jam and bring them up to the surface? How to check submerged vehicles. We've had several vehicles go into different retention ponds over the years. And there's a special way that we've got to check those vehicles and make sure that there's nobody inside and we don't get ourselves hurt in the process of doing it. Body locations and recovery, unfortunately, that's the other side of this. It's not always a rescue. There are recoveries that have to be made, but there's a special way to do that so that way we locate the body, bring closure to the family, but at the same time, when we do bring that incident to a close, we keep the thoughts and feelings of the family in mind that we do it in the best possible way. It's not to give them a giant shock when we try to bring that incident to a close. And last thing is working with City of South Milwaukee Fire Department, who have a Zodiac boat, because there are several bodies of water in the city that we can't get to from the shore. So if somebody's out in the middle kayaking or something like that happens, we're governed by about 150 feet. After that, if we have to rely on rope signals and a whole lot of other things, it's farther than we can work from a shore. So we have to have an alternative, and that's working from a boat. But that has its own hazards and its own intricacies that we have to know about. So that's why we train with them on a regular basis to make sure their boat operators know how to work with divers and our divers know how to work off the boats properly. This is just a quick snapshot of when we do enter the water in two basic scenarios, what we're looking to do. The one on your left is how we search for a person. The one on the right is if we're looking for a car and how to search a car, surround a car, check around it in a safe manner before we actually enter, before we search a car, make sure there's no occupants inside. So as you can see, it's not overly complex, but it does have a few moving parts. We have to have divers in the water, tenders on the shore on the other ends of those lines, safety divers, their tenders, and the appropriate equipment to do that, those searches. But those are our basic two operations right there. As far as when we looked at what we have for a hazard, I know after that incident in 2010, I personally drove the city, and I was kind of shocked at how much water there really is when you start driving neighborhoods and driving around. I got a couple that have asterisks next to them because we've had incidents there. Behind Home Depot, there's two retention ponds. We had a vehicle go in there about 3 years ago. Had a happy ending. They were out sopping wet waiting for us when we got there, but at least they were out. Condos and apartment complexes, as you guys know, dealing with plan commissions and things like that. There's a lot of water runoff, retention ponds, and things like that you have to account for stormwater. Well, that also means it's a place for either cars to go or people to go. Or as earlier today, we recognized firefighter paramedic Justin Palin. People fleeing the cops think that they're going to get away and head out there, which creates a hazard for us because someone's got to go get them. Two of the deepest inland lakes in Milwaukee County are in Franklin. Kottmeyer is about 35 feet deep. Monastery, it's on the DNR site, says about 30 feet deep, but we've been in that one, and our gauges have been anywhere between 35 plus. So the official record is 30, but our gauges tell different, and we've been in there. Man-made lakes like Tuckaway Shores, for example, was kind of, again, the catalyst. Its deepest spot is 15. And neighborhood parks and lagoons are all over the place. I only listed two. Hidden Lakes has two on 35th and Cypress, and Golden Lake off Putes. But there's a whole lot more that I could, you'd have pages and pages of PowerPoints of all the water that's around here. Some big, some small, but especially with all the rain we've had, all those retention ponds that might be 5-6 feet deep normally are a lot deeper right now. So they create hazards for us that we need to be aware of. As far as what we've done, any special team is special because it's something that doesn't happen often. It's a high-risk, low-frequency thing. Even when you get into the big cities and their special teams, it's not like going out on an EMS call, which we do 12, 15 times a day. These are things that happen not as often, but we still have to be prepared for them because they do take place. So, for example, for us, our very first call-out as a dive team was actually the city of Milwaukee when a plane crashed in 2013. They had two occupants, but the manifest said there could be four, and they ran out of divers. So they gave us a call to come out and give them an assist. By the time we got there, got out on Lake Michigan, went 2 miles out off the coast, they had accounted for everybody. But nonetheless, we were there to give our support. Town of Wind Lake in 2014 was missing a boater. We did a search for most of the day. We exhausted all our scuba tanks. We finished our search area before we just ran out of air. And Racine County came in, took over for us, and within a half hour to an hour, they found the boater. So we were in the area, we were close, just kind of ran out of air. We went back to Town of Wind Lake, again for another missing boater. But on this one, on July 30th, our divers actually found the boater. And in fact, they were all recognized for their accomplishments for that here in front of the Common Council for their actions that day. Because again, it may not have been a rescue, but it brought closure to the family. So they had someone to say goodbye to, someone to bury, someone to not worry about where are they, what's happening. So those were our guys that went out there and did that. Again, we went out to South Milwaukee for a boat that crashed into the breakwalls at about 2 in the morning. Again, they had 4 souls on board. 2 were recovered, 2 were missing, and they just ran out of divers to search the area out there. So they gave us a call. By the time we got out there again, they had located the other bodies, so we were sent home. But again, it was calling on us to do that. And then again, the event that we just recognized Firefighter Palin for just took place with the gentleman that swam out into the retention pond. It had a happy ending, but he was getting tired. It sounds like he was close to going under. We snagged him before it got that far. But again, it's why we have those resources in place to make sure that if something like that happens, we're able to take care of it. I quick threw this in because of what happened with Firefighter Palin and the crews that were working that day. This one just popped up the other day. I shouldn't say the other day, July 9th. But La Crosse just had a rescue not that long ago where they had a car that was fleeing police, lost control, crashed into the Swift Creek. He managed to get out of the vehicle, but in his panic, he drowned. He couldn't hold on to the ropes that the police officers were throwing him. As a result, they called for the La Crosse Fire Department and the dive team, who got there within minutes, dressed, figured out what the last scene point was, where he went under, went down, found him, brought him up, started CPR on the shore, and he was transported in critical condition. I don't have what his current condition is now, but the city of La Crosse and how they train and their procedures and their protocols are the same that we do. So this just kind of reinforces that when these things do happen, when properly trained, properly equipped, these things can be done. They can have happy endings. Not just sticking to ourselves, realizing that we have to deal and work with other people that have more knowledge than we do, that we have stepped outside of the city of Franklin. We've contacted and worked with the city of Milwaukee on a regular basis. We have a working relationship with the city of Indianapolis, who's a very active dive team, and several of their divers and dive commanders are lead instructors for Dive Rescue International, which is an internationally known training organization. So they've provided us a lot of SOGs, a lot of material, a lot of guidance as far as how to train, what to do, how to do. I can send the dive commander a text, and within an hour or so, he'll get me an answer. So he's been huge. And then the instructors from Dive Rescue International, from attending classes, they give you your business card, their off-duty number, their cell phone, their pager, their everything. Say, if you ever have a question, call me, because they're all about keeping us safe. And then finally, a resident here in the city has stepped forward, who's a certified dive instructor for PADI, which is an organization. For 10-plus years, he's a master diver. He's stepped forward, and he's actually offered his services to assist in training us to get us some of our certifications. So it's not only other departments. We have residents here within the city of Franklin that recognize this as a need and have stepped forward to help us. Some might be thinking, why not just let Milwaukee do it? They have the big rescue downtown. They got Lake Michigan. They got the Milwaukee River. Why not? Well, part of it is just like all of us, they're facing staffing issues. They're facing brownouts. They're facing an increased call volume. Their dive team is staffed when they're not on the dive truck. They're on a ladder truck. And that ladder truck is one of 2 downtown, which means they just got a lot busier because of closures and staffing cuts. So they're going to a lot more fires, which means they're not in their station as often. So if we did have to call them and they're out, which most often they are, they have to clear that scene, go back to their firehouse on 1st and Virginia, switch off their truck to get on their dive truck to drive out here to Franklin. That response alone, even without all the shifting around, could be anywhere between 25 to 30 minutes, just to get here on the freeways, time of day, congestion, all that sort of thing. So as much as we still will work with them and we will still request them if we have a dive response, we still need to fill that gap, that 25 to 30-minute gap. So we have to have an answer for what to do other than standing on the shore. So the whole point of what we were looking for and what the council here graciously passed was, at this point we're looking for the endorsement from you guys that we are a needed entity, we are needed special teams. and that if we do come across alternate funding, grants, that sort of thing that requires council approval, that you guys will entertain those motions, that we are a valuable resource that can use those fundings to purchase dry suits, communications, and help us achieve our certifications that we need to keep us up to date. New skills, new tools, like anything else, everything's always evolving. There's always something new to learn. There's always new equipment. But we're looking just to get ourselves to keep our divers safe. And that's just part of the conclusion that, again, we may not be on Lake Michigan. We may not have the Milwaukee River, but we do have a lot of water when you look at a map. And I'm sure when that screen goes up and you look at the big map, you'll see all the bodies of water, some big, some small, but all equally dangerous. We've had 5 responses since then. And again, we're just looking, we're at a critical juncture here. We're just looking to look for those alternate resources and funding avenues to keep ourselves going. And I just ended with our mission statement, which is brand new for us. It kind of sums everything up, saying that the mission of the Franklin Fire Department dive team is to respond when called to the best of our abilities to rescue or recover a drowning victim. We shall train, prepare, and pre-plan to ensure all divers are given the tools and resources to perform their duties. We continually strive to make ourselves better in order to serve our city and the surrounding communities. So that way, anything that happens here in the city or any neighbors that need our help, we can hopefully provide that and assist them as best we can. So.
Well, thank you very much, Firefighter.
Can I?
Sure. Alderman Barber.
Could you introduce the dive team that's here? Just.
I can. In the back.
Start with yourself.
Okay.
Sorry, I didn't do that.
My name is Sean Ganser. I'm the dive team commander. I have been we started in 7. I took over about 5 years ago. Assistant Chief Pat Hayes kind of started the whole thing with the assistance of then Assistant Chief Adam Remington, and then were gracious enough to turn the reins over to myself. In the back, if they'll stand, I've got firefighter paramedic Chad Feckler and firefighter paramedic Chris Foley. Who've been on the team since the inception and have been huge assets, as of all our divers are, by putting up with my monthly trainings and the heck I put them through and preparing them and everything else. So it's those guys and everyone else that unfortunately couldn't come because they're on duty or everything else that make this.
Okay. Alderwoman.
Where are you practicing your pool time?
Actually, Whitnall High School has been very gracious to us that as long as they don't have a class going, they give us the pool for as long as we need it. So we'll set up obstacle courses. We actually have a PVC car that we've dragged there, put together, put a dummy in it, full of seat belts that the guys have blacked out, have to go down, search it, find the dummy, cut seat belts. As long as we don't damage anything, knock on wood, they're good with us doing whatever. So they've been huge to this whole thing. And not that Franklin hasn't been good, they just have more constraints during the day than Whitnall has. So trying to do stuff on duty, it's just easier for us to just cross the border.
Are you going to use some of this funding? I'm just wondering how you maintain your tanks and, you know, the pressurization and all.
The tanks and all that we can fill at our fire station, too, like we do our normal SCBA bottles. Every 5 years, they do have to go in for testing, so that we do. When something does break or something like that, the chief and the AC have been good about getting those parts fixed. It's just, you know, it's those little things. It's when you get to be bigger ticket items. But as far as maintaining what we have now, we're doing all right.
I know that the Kupfmeyer Lake is spring-fed, and so that would probably require the dry suits to get into that.
It's very cold.
Going in with a wetsuit's probably not, especially if you're going to be down for a while with that.
The problem we run into with wet versus dry is once we hit the bottom and we stir all that up, we don't know what we're crawling through.
Right.
So it could be if we're off by the golf course, there's runoff from fertilizers. Even every lake in Wisconsin, water is considered cold because, like you said, everything's spring fed. You start getting 10 feet and deeper, and it gets cold really quick. So those suits keep everything off of the divers. If we're searching for a car, any leaking gasoline, motor oil, transmission fluid, we don't want that soaked up into a wetsuit against their skin. Because initially we might be fine, but now it's a week, a month later on that suddenly someone starts to develop a rash or an itch or a problem that's like, uh-oh, what did we get exposed to? So those whole suits keep a barrier between us and what we're crawling through.
I don't know if you guys know this, but there's only, four or five naturally occurring lakes in Milwaukee County, and Franklin has the majority of.